Chris Johnston will join us here in just a moment. CJ's a big Cowboy fan, so I'm sure that he was not having a very good time. He was
Him and Pierre must have been. They were probably with each other. And I just can't take them. I tell them all the time their team's junk. And I got Bowen and the Goons sending me gifts of Aaron Rodgers doing his stupid hand thing. I just can't take it. I can't take it.
Well, you of all people need to take it because you have 15 different teams that you support. Now you're a Joe Burrow
guy. What are you talking about? I'm Tampa Bay Bucks, and I've said when Brady goes, I might jump on the bandwagon of the Bengals. Not a bad thing to do. What is so bad about that?
Pathetic.
Well,
worse
find
than
a team
crime.
That is. Yeah, but all you're doing is jumping from Brady to Burrow.
It's an option. I might go Kansas City.
I don't even know.
Exactly.
That's better. Go with Mahomes.
Go with the Bears or something like that.
That's what you should do.
Like, go with a team that needs help and needs your support.
Show that you're a ride or die. Go with the Lions. Go with Detroit.
There you go.
Stick to it. We can battle it out in the NFC North. If you have any stones, you're a Lions fan. If you're not pissy, you're a Lions fan.
Exactly.
Here's our TSN hockey insider, Chris Johnston. Were you crying with 4 or 5 minutes to go yesterday or the other day, CJ? What was that all about?
Man, I'm still in denial, honestly. I know I should know better. I know I shouldn't invest my mental energy into this team, but I really thought this year was going to be different. So, yeah, it's not a good Sunday around me, and I haven't really dealt with it yet since.
But, CJ, are you like Pierre, where every time there's a loss, Pierre goes, I actually love them even more now. Like, are you in that same headspace?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm like 2+ decades deep at this point. Like, so, you know, there's nothing they can do that's going to break me more than I've already been broken over the years. But I'm probably not as emotional as Pierre. Like, Pierre, I don't know what I'm allowed to say here. I'm not sure how many people are listening, but like, Pierre was like drunk texting me on Sunday night. Like, just, I could tell he was just bombed, just like pouring his soul out over the Cowboys. So, you know, he maybe gets a little bit more emotionally invested because he's been in it a little bit longer. But yeah, I'm not bailing on them now.
Well, does it give you an appreciation for Leaf fans covering the Leafs as closely as you do, considering you're going through it with the Cowboys? It's the same story, effectively. Does it change your perspective at all?
It does. I think it does connect me to what I know. You know, even I've got buddies, right, that are Leafs fans, of course. And, you know, my dad's been a Leaf fan for a long, long time. You know, I understand what they've been through. And it probably feels the same because the frustration is the Cowboys do lure me in every year. Like that picture that O-Dog sent on Twitter was like painfully accurate because every season, you know, you start off a little skeptical and you think you're going to wait to see more. And this regular season, I really thought the Cowboys with their defense was built to have a long run. And I imagine that's been the way Leaf fans have felt.
It's the same thing. It's the exact same thing. Yeah. Every year. It's the same.
The weird part is you kind of know how it's going to end. Like on Sunday, like I was texting some guys before the game and I was like, I just got a feeling there's going to be a dumb play or a referee thing or just something that ruins this. Like, and you know, I'm certainly not blaming the ref at the end of the, you know, that last play of the game, but it just felt inevitable that it was going to go wrong kind of the way I think. And I think a lot of Leaf fans feel that way too, even as great as their season's been this year again.
Yeah. Well, that's the truth. Yeah.
Well, the only thing you draw parallel to Cowboys and the Leafs, yeah, the records, but like how big of organizations they are, right? They are the faces of their franchise, like the faces of
the
league.
Leagues, yeah, biggest
their
ratings,
leagues, right?
Biggest fans.
Yeah, like that's and loud and, you know, the Cowboys fans are everywhere. Leafs fans are everywhere. So that's the parallel. And you hope the Leafs try and break through that. But I saw a lot of tweets the same thing on Sunday. People like, here we go again. And it's just the fan base gets tortured, but you hang in there. And
once
you
you're in that,
that
long,
through,
you,
right?
you yeah, there's no point in leaving now. You know, like the time to leave was a long time ago. Long time ago when John Kitna was taking snaps. You should have been thinking about it, but you're in now, so you might as well keep rolling. The Leafs are in New York tomorrow night. Jake Muzzin has been diagnosed with a concussion. He isn't on the flight, didn't make the trip. Justin Hall remains out. So that back end of the defensive rotation, I guess, will be tested tomorrow night, and we've talked about this before, CJ. That's probably where they're going to be looking to upgrade, and I think there'll be a battle for that third pairing. Let's say, hypothetically, the Leafs find a top four and they plug someone in there with Muzzin. I'm not convinced it's a lock that, you know, any combination of Sandin, Hall, Dermott, Liljegren are there for that third pairing. I think the four of them will more or less battle it out. I think Sandin certainly has the position, you know, the is the pace car right now. But how do you see that playing out?
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, you certainly don't want to see Jake Muzzin get injured. He's had a tough season as it is, and the concussion, you know, that's not great circumstances. But you probably don't mind if you're the Leafs seeing these guys play under a bit more duress now. I mean, you have Sandin Liljegren, looks like will be the second pairing for tomorrow's game, you know, in New York. And so you're maybe getting to see those guys in a different situation than typically they've been playing, certainly tougher minutes. You know, with both Sandin and Liljegren largely been third pairing defensemen this year in most of the games that when they've been deployed. I'm with you. I think it's wide open. You know, when they've been healthy, and it's been a little while now because they've had guys in and out of protocol and all that, this stuff. But, you know, when they were healthy, they were doing a rotation with Dermott, Sandin, and Liljegren. And so at that point, that was kind of telling, you know, assuming that if they make an acquisition at the trade deadline that they're not trading a defenseman out, and I'm not convinced that's the case. I mean, maybe you see one of these guys moved as part of that deal, or maybe another deal that's sort of made in concert with it. But if it's just a pure ad situation, you know, I would give Sandin the five spot right now, and then we could probably have a debate about where they're at. You know, the good news if you're the Leafs is you got half a season still to figure it out. I mean, it's weird to be saying that in January or mid-January, but you know, there's still a lot of games to be played. It's going to be a busy schedule once the league announces that new February schedule, and I'm sure they're going to need 8 or 9 or 10 defensemen between now and the end of the year to get through this thing.
What's your read on how the league feels about COVID factoring into the latter parts of the season? In other words, there's been so many guys who have got it. They're already changing the testing protocols. Do they feel like they're almost through the woods, and once they get through it and hit February, March, it's kind of like home free, or will they allow themselves to feel that comfortable?
They probably will never get fully comfortable, but there's certainly a lot of optimism now. I mean, you know, what the league told teams today in a memo is that 73% of the players have you know, got COVID this year. And, you know, what that means is they get 90-day what's called testing holidays where they don't have to be tested. Now, the league isn't going to test players that don't have symptoms except for when you're crossing a border and it's required by law. And so I think that there is, between all those factors coming together, you know, that kicks in after the All-Star game February 7th. You know, I think there is a great degree of optimism that we won't see the same kind of interruptions we've seen to the schedule in the first half. You know, I do think they've basically got the finalized revamp schedule with all the postponements. There's 104 postponed games, you know, in the first half of the season. I think that's all been sort of settled. And, you know, I think that there is some hope here that they can get through the second half. You know, there might be a team or two that gets shut down, but without the sort of mass kind of shutdowns we saw in December and parts of January. And so, you know, now we just got to get some fans back in the Canadian buildings to go in concert with all that stuff. But, you know, I do think that the league feels it's sort of weathered the worst of the storm, and, you know, it should be a little smoother sailing in the second half of the season.
Hot topic in the last couple hours, obviously, was the exchange of Jim Matheson and Leon Draisaitl. What did you make of all of that? Have you been in that situation? You're a guy who's always been in the scrums. It's obviously a little bit different now over Zoom. You know, give us your opinion on the interaction, and then maybe tell if you've had, you know, a sharper interaction with somebody over your career.
I've definitely had the odd sharp interaction. You know, I'll tell you, it's far less common with sort of today's players than it was when I first started coming around 15 or 20 years ago. You know, that this is talking about even in the pre-COVID world, but you know, the guys now, it just doesn't happen quite as frequently. You know, I think the issue I would take with what happened today is you got to, as a journalist, you know, look, it's our job to kind of poke around sensitive issues, ask occasionally difficult questions. I mean, that's kind of part of the gig, but I think where and how you ask them is important too. And, you know, it looked like they had a podium set up there in Edmonton. I'm not sure coming back with that pissy question in that circumstance is the right thing to do. As much as Jim Matheson has been around for 100 years, he's been covering the NHL since before I was born, I believe. So I'm not telling him how to do his job. But I think that's where, you know, the player has a right to kind of snap back, because that might be something you can say in a one-on-one interaction. You know, I'm sure O's been through this, or you, Noodles, and at times where you maybe had an issue with a reporter or two. I mean, you can have a one-on-one conversation a certain way, but when things are done at the podium, I think you kind of have to be a little bit more by the book. And you know, given how sensitive things are in Edmonton, how much losing the team's done, you know, I wouldn't personally have gone down that road and you know, asked the guy why he was pissy in that situation.
CJ, it seemed like he was, like, it was, it's so obvious the reason why Edmonton is losing, and it was almost like, and I could tell, I think I can read people, I can tell what's going on, especially in this circumstance. I consider myself an expert, but you could see Draisaitl, because he started to almost laugh to himself and shake his head, because he knew, he was like, what is the one reason that's ailing the Oilers? And everybody, if you have half a brain and you watch hockey, knows what the problem with the Oilers is. So he was basically trying to get him to say our goaltending stinks, which it does. But he's not going to do that to his teammates and the goaltenders on the team.
Right, and I think that's what he meant when he said, like, you know, I don't need to say it because you're going to say whatever you're going to say. I mean, he said something to that effect, you know. Lots of people in our position on this side of the microphone have pointed out the Oilers have like 870 goaltending the last 14 or 16 games, whatever this stretch has been.
Right, so it begs the question, why would you even go there? You know the answer, and you're going to write whatever you're going to write anyway. Why are you trying to be – it's almost, I don't know. I thought it was really goofy from a guy that's been around a long time, as you mentioned.
Yeah, and look, it's like I wouldn't have done it at the end of the day. Like I it's probably my job to defend the journalist here, but I just wouldn't have gone that far down the road. I mean, I think you asked the first question, what's the one thing? Okay, you ask that and he doesn't bite. I'm not sure you keep going back to the well and poke him. You know, I do think on the flip side of this, from the player side though, I mean, look, nothing's gone right in Edmonton. I'm sure his teammates probably like that exchange. I mean, I'm sure they're tired of the media at this point in time. You know, maybe a little clap back like that might be something the Oilers can goof around with behind the scenes, might break the mood and, you know, help them feel a little better. So maybe this will all work out well, but, you know, in Leon's favor.
With Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider. So Kent Hughes is the man for the job in Montreal. He gets the GM job. He's a longtime agent in the league. He's from Montreal. He's bilingual. We're trying to get a read on what is possible in Montreal, because I think a scorched earth approach might be the way to go. But when you take a look at Cap Friendly and you realize how many players have long-standing deals, like Drouin, Anderson, Hoffman, Dvorak, Armia's locked in. On the back end, you got Petrie locked in. You've got David Savard locked in. You've got Gallagher locked in. Toffoli locked in. Edmondson locked in. Jake Allen's got this year and next. How reasonable is it to expect that they could pull that off even if they wanted to?
You didn't mention Carey Price either.
Yeah, Carey Price, sure, the biggest elephant in the room.
Probably a fascinating, you know, I'm not sure that they'll dig into it tomorrow at the press conference, but probably going to be the most interesting situation to watch in Montreal, just how that unfolds. You know, I think that, look, you got a GM now that's signed a five-year contract. You know, Jeff Gorton got a long-term deal, I would assume probably in the same range. I would be surprised if they don't go at least semi-scorched earth. You know, it's one thing Mark Bergevin has sort of refused to do. And, you know, we could debate whether it worked out or not. You know, they were in a conference final in 2014 near the time when he started. You know, they ended up making kind of a miracle run last year to the Stanley Cup final 7 years after that. And you know, but the Habs refused to kind of go the way the Leafs did when Brendan Shanahan took over, or we've seen other teams do. You know, I think there's some risk in it, obviously, because they've made it harder to win the draft lottery. With the way the ratios work and all that stuff, although, you know, Montreal is in a great spot at 32nd overall right now to at least have a shot at the number one pick in the upcoming draft. And so I think with totally new people coming in with long-term contracts, I'd be surprised if we didn't see something close to they might not call it a full-on rebuild, but, you know, I think that they'll probably go that route. I mean, it's the natural thing to do if you're just getting there. I don't know that it's a pretty veteran team. I know they've been just smoked by injuries and COVID situations this year, and that's played a role in how few games they've won. Not to mention, you know, Price and Shea Weber and all that stuff that's happened. But, you know, I would think that they're going to burn what they can to the ground and see where they're at, because it is an older team. I don't see them being one or two moves away from contending. And if you have that runway with your contract, I mean, why not use it and try to do something that might take a couple seasons to execute?
Yeah. That seems reasonable, and you're already there anyway right now because of how bad the season's gone. You know, it'd be one thing if they took over halfway through last season, then the team goes to a cup final, and you're like, how are we supposed to explain what we really want to do here? But adjustments have happened on the fly. I would use Masai Ujiri and the Raptors as an example. When Masai got here, he wanted to trade Lowry, trade DeMar, scorched earth, be awful, and chase Andrew Wiggins 2 or 3 years down the road. And then right. adjustments were made. That may be what ends up happening if you can't unload everyone you want to. And then next year you have a much better season. Plans could change, and it's probably going to be Carey Price that makes that determination, right? Like if he's on your team next year and playing, and what if he has a really good season? You're going to win it. You're going to win games. You're going to be a decent team. You may not. I don't think you'll be a great team, but you'll be a decent team with a very good Carey Price.
True, and just what you mentioned too. Like it's just clicking for me. I mean, even if they want to trade everyone, obviously they're not going to be able to. I mean, they have all those deals you mentioned. They might fall into a different plan along the way. You know. I'm not convinced, though, that Carey Price will stay in Montreal. I mean, it's so premature to say, and he's basically restarting his knee rehab now, so I don't know if he'll be healthy to play this season. But that's the one I could see that being a trade that they're able to pull off. I think if they're eating salary on that player, I do think that there are teams around the league, even given what's gone on here the last 7 or 8 months for him. That will make that trade, even with the time remaining on his contract. I'm sure some of these other guys can be moved. I think at minimum they're shipping out some salary, not to be a cap team right away. I mean, right now they're pretty capped out, and they're obviously just going to try to have more futures enter the organization to play with Cole Caufield and Nick Suzuki and some of the younger guys that they're hoping lead the next wave.
We'll see what happens. It'll be an interesting one tomorrow in Montreal, that's for sure. And the Leafs in action tomorrow. The Oilers back in action with Florida in town on Thursday. So we look forward to all the Canadian content coming up. And we always appreciate you finding time for us. Thank you, Chris.
Be well, guys. See you soon.
There's Chris Johnston, our TSN hockey insider.